Well, welcome to another exciting episode of Launch, where we talk with entrepreneurs and inventors as they journey along. And today we're going to have a very special guest. It's going to be Damon Borosny of JetSox. How are you doing, Damon?
Just fine. Thanks for having me.
Okay. JetSox, it says it's a company making wing covers that prevent overnight accumulation of frost on the flying surface of airplanes. That's really timely subject for this time of the year, you know, with all these ice storms coming through and everything. So how did you get involved with JetSox?
It was an idea that a roommate of mine had. He was a commercial pilot, and he was sitting at the front of an airplane. And, you know, when you're flying, you know, there are times you have to de-ice. And sometimes it's not necessarily always because you have 3 inches of snow or heavy accumulation on your wing. A lot of times what will make you de-ice is a very, very thin layer of ice. And so what that, you know, it's something you could practically brush off with your hand. You know, it's the equivalent of, down here in the South at least, you know, you come out in the morning and you've got that thin layer of ice on your windshield.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like that. Well, that you have to de-ice. So what that means is your plane is automatically late because you've got to pull back, go to the de-ice pad, get de-iced, then get back in line to take off, and none of that's scheduled.
Yeah, because I've heard these stories that of planes getting ice and then getting de-iced and then having to wait a while, and then they get iced up again and have to go back and get de-iced one more time before they can actually take off. That can be pretty irritating.
Yeah, and now my product is not going to do anything about that. What mine's going to do is it prevents the frost that accumulates at night. So you put the covers on at the end of the day, and then at the end of the flying day, the covers are the wings are clean when you take off the covers in the morning.
Okay.
So it, you know, because with the stuff on your windshield, you know, you could scrape it off very quickly and you're done. You know, so it's not a lot is the point. And so what we're doing is we're, you know, letting people and letting airlines and our customers have some certainty and bring some certainty into their world, because de-icing is completely reactionary.
Okay. Well, you talked about your product. What exactly is a JetSox? Okay. I mean, that's kind of an intriguing name.
It is. It's a great name. And what it is, it's kind of a misnomer, because it implies that it's a sock that goes over the wing like you're putting a sock on your foot, and it's not that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. What it is, it's a cover that goes on. So it's like a sheet. It's like a sheet for a wing.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes on over the wing and then buckles underneath.
Okay.
So, and it does that for the wing and for the tail.
Okay. And how long does it take to install something like that, or de-install?
Less than two. It'll take two men less than 20 minutes to put on, and it comes off even faster.
Okay. And how long does it normally take for somebody to have to, you know, de-ice an entire wings of a plane?
It could take heavy accumulation could take 20 to 30 minutes.
Okay.
To de-ice. Not to mention the travel time to and from the pad, because airports have these. You have zones, areas where they have to do the de-icing because the fluid is so toxic.
Oh, okay.
So you've got to fly out there, shut your plane off, be de-iced, fire your plane back up, get back in line to take off.
Okay. Well, you mentioned that it was your roommate having the idea. I've seen ads for inventors which says, you know, make millions from your idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've heard other people say, well, you know, an idea is worth absolutely nothing. You have to actually, you know, put some legs onto it.
Sure.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah. I am of the latter, that ideas are worth nothing in and of themselves, you know, because I have ideas all the time. You know, I really do. And I have to fight myself to not pursue them because I like the buzz of a new idea. But really, they're absolutely useless until you do something with them,
okay.
Until you either research them, you know, find out, yeah, this is something that I want to do, or no, it's not. You know, ideas themselves are worthless. And me, I like new ideas. I like the new, and I get bored with the doing something with the idea.
Okay.
I lose interest there.
Yeah, well, you know, our producer is Lee Cantor, and I'm sure that Lee has seen lots of ideas of all the different shows that he's produced. What's your opinion of ideas being worthless versus, you know, worth a gazillion dollars?
Until you can find that person that's gotten that check for the idea, I will go along with you guys that ideas are worthless.
Okay. So when the check shows up, then all of a sudden this...
Has anyone met that person, that mythological person who had this great idea and then someone wrote them a big check for it?
I've only seen that happen one time, but it was with a serial inventor. His actual business card, you know, said serial inventor in his name.
He invented cereal?
No. It's kind of like serial killer, but it was a serial inventor. He had invented a lot of things. The collapsible stroller and the hair dryers and different things like that. I mean, he invented for a living. I mean, companies would come to him and say, well, we want something in this space. Go do it. And
what a great job.
Yeah, wouldn't that be super?
Yeah.
I mean, it took, I'm sure he starved at the beginning, but they, finally when he got a track record, you know, companies were coming to him. And the talk that I heard, he went into somebody that he had successfully invented for many, many, many times and says, I've got an idea in this space. And the fella says, well, how much money do you need? And he says, well, I need $20,000. And he just wrote him a check.
Wow. So, but you have to have a track record. It's like, I guess, a musician. You know, a new band isn't going to get a check, but, you know, if you're the Rolling Stones, they'll say, yeah, we'll fund that album of yours.
Right.
And the same thing with authors. You know, if you've, authored a lot of, bestsellers, and you say, I've got an idea for another book, they'll give you an advance. You know?
Exactly.
But not if you've got zero track record. the idea is pretty much worthless. So, where do ideas come from? I mean, where are the places? I've heard, ideas come in the shower and stuff like that, but are there any particular ways of getting inspiration for an idea?
For me, it's a mix of, like, something structured and looking around and looking around my environment for mm-hmm. stuff. A lot of it is just being inquisitive. You know, there's a designer. I forgot the guy's name. It's not Stark, but somebody else. And what he said is that he tries to be childlike, not childish, but he tries to look at the world like a child does. And if you ever watch kids and the way that they interact and the way that they're just playing, they have no attachment, like a younger child, they have no attachment to what they're doing. They just do it and it's interesting, and it's interesting because it's interesting. And I think for me, when I start looking at things like that, everything, like, things just pop up. Like, wow, what about this? Okay, that's neat. What if we do that? You know, that's one form of ideation. That's really, it's really big picture. It's really anything's possible. You know, but then, then you have to, you got to kind of boil it down. And, like for Jet Sox, I couldn't just, okay, we're going to go into the tire business because I have this great idea for tires. Or this morning, as I'm de-linting my sweater, okay, like the lint roller.
Right.
Like, man, it would be great if somebody would invent wool that does not attract lint.
Like Jet socks for lint.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. Or, like a wool that is lint repellent. I mean, for the overnight accumulation of cat hair. That was an idea. Go with it, please. I would love to see that.
And yeah, it's almost like anti-static. So instead of, being static and attracting, the lint and the hair and all like that, it would be anti-static and actually repel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, jump on that. That's right up your alley.
I need Mr. Engineer.
See, Ron's an engineer, so yeah. He can do this in his free time.
See, it's kind of what you really need is you need a lint taser. So you need to tase your sweater right, before you turn it on, and it explodes all that. Lint off of it.
But then when your girlfriend comes up to kiss you and she bounces off, just
yeah,
boom.
Some of the risks.
That would be bad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You have to have good insurance.
Right.
That's right.
But for me, I just look for ideas wherever. And I play with the idea in my head and then I just let it go. Hmm. And I'm a firm believer that ideas come from, I hate to say it like this, but the universe. Mm-hmm. It comes from around you. Because I have had three or four that I thought were genius ideas. I didn't do anything with, and 3 months later, somebody else grabs them and does something with it. How is that possible? So the only idea that I can come up with is that these ideas are out there floating around, and whoever grabs them.
Yeah, I've heard it called a lot of different things. There's the 100 monkey story, but simultaneous invention happens a lot. When people are experiencing the same problem, you know, the way their brain works is that they'll come up with the same solution, and some people act on it and others don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I like what you're saying about childlike. You know, if you and I look at a cloud, we just say, well, there's a cloud up there. And, of course, the child will say, well, there's a puppy dog, there's a whale. You know, they'll actually see things in the clouds that, you know, once they mention it, it's like, well, yeah, it does kind of look like a puppy dog, you know. But
right.
They have a different way of looking at the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so what made you take this idea of Jet Sox and move forward rather than just have this another one of these ideas that didn't go anywhere?
That is a great question. I think it's because Cliff mentioned it to me a couple years before we did anything with it, and we were sitting around one day and we just started talking because he's kind of a serial inventor. At least he's an idea guy.
Okay.
Very, very much an idea guy. And we were sitting around and we were talking about all these ideas that we had. And for some reason, Jet Sox just stuck with me that day. It just said, okay, now is the time. And I can't explain it. I can only say that for whatever reason at that moment, it really like it. And I don't know whether maybe Cliff explained it a little differently to me, or I started to see the market, uh-huh. or maybe because of the experiences that I had between when he first mentioned it to me. Because I remember when he did, and when we started talking about it, like now I have the wherewithal, I have the experience, you know, to do something with it. There's a quote, I know you guys have heard it. I think it's fortune favors the prepared mind.
Correct.
The only thing I can think about is that somehow I was prepared at that moment to do something with the idea.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about Jet Sox, you know, my favorite type of invention is something that's small, that's made out of an inexpensive material and has a really huge market, you know, because the probability of success with that goes way up. Jet Sox is not small. I mean, the addressable market is pretty darn big
mm-hmm.
because, I mean, you got, you know, there's lots of planes that are...
How many planes are there?
Depends on the market you go after. So there's in the business aviation. So these are guys from... like a private company or a company who has, you know, their own airplane
right.
on over to charter. You know, there's upwards of 20,000 planes just in the U.S. doing that. In the regional airline market, which are not necessarily like the Deltas of the world, but the some of the smaller regional guys, there are 5,000-6,000 planes there easily in that market. You know, now they're dominated by a few. So if you know, it's the 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. You know, 20% of the 20% of the aircraft types are flying 80% of the traffic.
What about like the individual recreational pilot? Is that a market, or that's there's too many different sizes to manufacture that?
Yeah, I think it's for us. It's too fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we need is we need somebody who is going to buy 5 covers from us at once. Because the sales effort, because there's training involved
right.
that goes with it. It's not... Now, if we ever move beyond to maybe into the general aviation market, that might be something. But right now, you know, the planes that we're targeting, you've got to be a very wealthy man.
Right.
A wealthy, very, very wealthy individual to afford one of these planes and to run it. You know, because,
right.
you know, burning jet fuel is not cheap. You know, and the maintenance and all that.
And it's not getting any cheaper either.
No, it's not.
Well, you know... Jet Sox is really it's a new concept, and mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times new concepts are going to meet resistance. Have you encountered that?
I'm waiting for the acceptance. That's all we get is resistance. You know, it's amazing to me how much effort it takes to change people's habits.
It's quite a bit. You know, I always give the example of the reason that the DVD player, and of course now it's Blu-ray, the DVD player took something like 3 years to get, you know, pretty much saturate the market. And it took something like 28 years for the VCR. Hmm. Because the VCR had people's habits. They knew how, well, they still don't know how to program the clock. Okay, and they know the movement of inserting the media in there and hitting the button. And so when the DVD player came out and it was a lot superior, then customer acceptance was almost instantaneous.
Sure. Well, you already had the markets, too. I mean, when VCRs first came out, there was no Blockbuster. You had to buy everything. Or you had to rent them from the grocery store or whatever local store
you had. The education process was over. Now, people just go, oh, this is a better VCR. They had something to compare it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like the VCR, but cleaner.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully it's not going to take 28 years for Jet Sox to take off.
No. We won't be around if it takes 28 years for it to take off. You know, we are just trying to change people's habits because de-icing it's sloppy, it's dirty, it's old technology.
It's probably not good for the environment either.
It's horrible for the environment. The stuff that it's made from is kind of like antifreeze for your car.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
And that's what they spray on the wings, and that removes the ice, that antifreeze-like material?
Yes, it does. What it does is it lowers the temperature, the freezing point of water. It's glycol, so it takes the freezing temperature down, so you can operate, you can have wet in a colder environment.
So you can really position Jet Sox as a green solution then?
We can.
Is there any tax benefits for a person to switch to this? Because now with all that greening stuff, there's no tax angle on this?
I hadn't even thought about it, but I don't know is the answer. Mm-hmm. The answer is I don't know.
You can throw in a tax credit. Where they're getting it for free or close to free.
Right, yeah. There you go. It's,
you might have easier acceptance.
That is a great one. I need to write the president. It absolutely is a green benefit because it's, you know, not only that, but, you know, you've heard of the antifreeze killing kittens and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, animal gets into it and it's poisonous. Just imagine that you're pouring, you know, hundreds of thousands of gallons of it.
And where does it go? It just goes, they have a drain under it and just pouring out?
It goes into the drain. Now, that's why earlier I was mentioning you got to fly out to the de-icing area. It's called the de-ice pad. So you fly out there, and what it is, because it's so toxic, it's its own reclamation system. Right. So it captures it, treats it before it drops it off into
the regular sewage.
Because what it does is it actually sucks oxygen out. So you put this into a lake or whatever, and the fish will die because there's no oxygen in the water. Right.
Well, I would think that the de-icing industry really hopes you'll go away.
Maybe that's the problem. Let's talk conspiracy theory.
It's absolutely Dow Chemical keeping me down.
That's right.
It's got to be.
But, you know, it reminds me of the Dyson vacuum cleaner story. Mm-hmm. He went to all the major manufacturers of vacuum cleaners and presented his bagless vacuum cleaner. And they all said, you know, we're not interested. And they weren't interested because they make their money selling bags.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really hoping he'd go away.
Sure.
But he didn't. You know.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, we're not the first ones to come up with wing covers. I mean, they've been out. Mm-hmm. But we are the first ones who aren't a chemical company. You know, because you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a disruptive technology.
Yeah.
You know, it absolutely goes against the grain of the way that things are done now. So the incumbent or the people who've been there forever and doing it the old-fashioned way, their organizations are even set up to resist this. So they're not even – this won't even come up on their radar as a possibility.
Okay. So I guess there is a conspiracy theory, but it's out in the open.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Trying to shine some light on it, you know.
Okay. Well, a lot of inventors, when they come up with the idea, they just think they're going to find somebody that's going to pay them money for the idea. And the last thing that's on their mind is putting together a business plan. What are your thoughts about that?
I've done it both ways. This is my fourth, if you count, you know, when I was a kid mowing lawns, business. Okay, that I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they were all failures because I failed to plan. And so I wrote the business plan a couple of years ago. And it took a while. And the thing that I didn't realize about writing a business plan is the thought process that goes into it is methodical and it's required, because then I was forced to confront the size of the market. Is this a profitable idea? Because, you know, I was in love with the idea. I love the idea of Jet Sox. I think it's awesome. I can see a need for it. But is there a big enough market that it's going to pay me? And is it going to pay off? And that's what I was forced to confront when I wrote the business plan. And it was really confronting having to go out and do the research. Where do you find the numbers on this? And it's not fun. You know, there are parts of it, especially like learning financials. I mean, that's not my forte. You know, dealing with math, figures, projections. It's not my forte. It's not my background. So for me, doing the plan really, really helped solidify things, and it made me ask the tough questions. You know, so I recommend that everybody, you know, you got to do a business plan for this, no matter what it is. Even if it's, well, I'm just going to make it, I'm going to license it to a corporation, you still got to have a business plan with that.
Yeah, because what's the value proposition to who you're going to license it to? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can just imagine the thought process you went through of like, okay, it's for airplanes. How many airplanes are they? You know, what are the different segments of airplanes? There's the, you know, the ones for personal use. There's the business use. There's the giant. There's mm-hmm. the different large airlines. You know, which one do you attack first? And
right.
And of course, you're not going to try to sell this down in Florida. You know, it's got to be up north where there's actually ice. You know.
Right.
So I can imagine what you went through of just segmenting things and deciding, you know, is it going to be profitable and what's the path, you know, of where we get the initial acceptance and how it grows and everything.
Yeah, and I honestly, I'll be straight, I haven't looked at the business plan in a long time. But that's not the power of it. The power of it was in the planning.
Right.
You know, because I know for me, I'm extremely practical. Like, it's just a waste. I'm not going to look at it. Why am I going to bother writing it?
Right.
Well, it's very, very useful in that respect.
You're probably internally guided on the plan. You don't have to actually look at it on paper, but it's still inside your brain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Like, I can tell you what the plan is, and I can tell you our market size and all that. So, yeah, it's in there. I mean, I spent, you know, a couple of months on it, and it was quite a process.
Wow.
Quite a process to come up with. And there's some great resources. I mean, there's templates all over the place. I didn't use any of the, like, the software, the business plan writing software. I went to, one of the SBA websites, the Small right. Business Association.
Yeah, it's a free download, yeah.
Yeah, and downloaded it there, and that's what I started with, and it worked really well.
Yeah, because, you know, the old saying is if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of going through that plan is to think through all of what's going on because, you know, things are going to happen that you didn't plan for. But at least you've gone through the process and you're mm-hmm. you're ready to adjust and tweak the plan that you've come up with.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, I wrote the plan for funding for us to, you know, get an infusion of cash from somewhere, mm-hmm. fairly large amount. That's not happening. You know, we've changed our plan midway through.
Right.
But it doesn't matter, you mm-hmm. know, that now I can, if I had to, I could go in and revamp the plan very quickly.
Right. And that's typical that you've got to revamp.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
I still remember the original Desert Storm, you know, many, many years ago with President Bush Sr., that they had a plan, you know, of how they were going to, you know, free Kuwait and everything. And they ended up, you know, driving through the desert, you know, with the plan on top of a Jeep and, you know, looking at the conditions and turning right at when they felt like it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's a term for it. It's fog of war.
Yeah.
You know, you get into the, fine, okay, here's the plan. And then you hit go or start and everything changes.
Oh, yeah. Rapidly. Yeah.
Everything changes.
Right. It has to be fluid. It's got to be able to be nimble enough to move. And that's one of the benefits of being a small business person as opposed to a big corporation. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are nimble to make these kind of immediate adjustments on the fly without a lot of bureaucracy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's as quick as a phone call.
Right.
And on the phone call, you know, one of the things that you wrote down here for the interview says you may be surprised what people will do when you just ask. Explain that to me.
It's Cliff Atkins is my business partner on this, and he's the inventor. He said it to me once. He said something very similar to that. People will do anything for you if you just ask. A lot of the resistance that I've noticed with myself is I just don't want to. Whether I'm embarrassed, I've predetermined that they're going to say no to whatever I'm asking. You know, we've gotten a lot of stuff because people, they just like to be, they just want to be included, or, you know, human nature is one to help out.
Yeah.
You know, you find somebody and there's a lot of no's. Now, you know, don't take that as, you know, we've got people beating down our door. We really don't. There's a lot of no's out there, but you get some people that like-minded individuals and they just, yeah, no problem. Do you need this? Okay. No sweat. Let me see what I can do. And people are very willing, much more willing than I realized.
Yeah. I know there's a tendency, especially with inventors, to be what I call the John Wayne of do it by, all by myself kind of concept, you know, the rugged American.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. A lot of times if you just go to somebody and say, you know, we need your help, and here's, you know, how you can help. While some of them would say, go away, don't bother me. Mm-hmm. Others will be, oh, okay, yeah, I'll do this.
Right.
No problem.
Yeah, and I think phrasing it in that in the way you said is perfect. I need your help. You know, because that gets them into a form of collaboration with you.
Right.
Instead of, I need to spend 15 minutes with your aircraft. As opposed to, look, you know, we're trying to get some measurements on an airplane because we're trying to, you know, build this business. And can you help us out with that?
Yeah.
Very, very different conversations.
Much, much different. Because, mm-hmm. you know, people want to feel appreciated. They want to feel like they can make a contribution, you know. And you're recognizing that maybe they're an expert in that area and can really give you some good tips. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
Really amazing.
Because if somebody's been an airline mechanic for 30 years and you come to them and say, you know, can you help me with this? I mean, then all of a sudden their 30 years is being appreciated. You know?
Yes.
Right. And that's a good lesson for the inventors out there to not be afraid to ask. I'm sure a lot of them, like you were saying, they get caught up in their own neuroses about feeling uncomfortable about asking, when if you just throw it out there and let the person decide if they have the time to see you or not, or if it's worth their time,
yeah.
you're going to be pleasantly surprised more times than not, I think.
Yeah.
But do you have to be careful what you ask for?
Yes, you do. Yes, you absolutely do. I had a realization about a year into JetSox, because for my whole life, you know, I've been saying I want to own my own business.
Right.
That's easy. You can own your own business. It's not specific enough. So I've been saying that my whole life, not realizing that I've already got my own business. Mm-hmm. You know, what I didn't say is I want to have my own, you know, my own business, and I'm making this much
money.
My
own profitable business.
My own profitable. That would even be a lot more specific. So you got to definitely be careful what you ask for.
My multi-million-dollar business. That's what I'd like to own.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're getting close to Super Bowl time, mm-hmm. and many years ago, I heard this story about a team that, at the beginning of the season, what they said is, "We're going to the Super Bowl. We're going to the Super Bowl." And they chanted that over and over again. And guess what? They went to the Super Bowl. And they lost, because what they should have been saying is, "We're going to win at the Super Bowl."
Right.
And they forgot that little
not
bitty
visit.
Part.
Not sit in a stand.
I mean, they got the ring for being in the Super Bowl.
Sure, it's a win to be there, but it's not. It's not the win.
That's right.
Right.
That is true. So one of the items you got here is take on obligations as a way to make yourself try harder and be successful. Help me understand that.
Yeah. This is something that I realized. You know, because this whole venture has been happening while I'm employed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this has always been my night job. This has been my, I do this, I skip lunch and I, you know, go out and make a phone call or do whatever at lunch.
Right.
And so it's really easy to become lazy and complacent for me. Because while I have this vision of what I want JetSox to be, I'm still getting a paycheck every 2 weeks. It doesn't hurt.
You don't have that sense of urgency.
Right. And so what I've late last year, we agreed and we brought on a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
And he's awesome. But for me, it really became much more urgent to become profitable and to make a sale when I brought him on board, because he's got 3 kids, he's got a wife. I stepped back and said, okay, how many people am I responsible for now? When I don't want to, you know, because I've already worked 12 hours at my other job. Do I really want to come home and bust out a couple hours on JetSox? Well, I've got really 10 people counting on me.
That's motivation, yeah.
You know, and when I want to quit, I just think about that. Because it gets me out of my own stuff.
Yeah, because you're right. Because, you know, just having that steady paycheck, okay, you're not quite as hungry.
It's lazy.
Yeah, I've heard the definition of motivation is when the stomach meets the backbone and says hello. All of a sudden you get motivated.
Yes. Yeah, that is exactly right. So for me, that's just an external way to keep things present. You know, it's seductive just to go home and kick back with a book or, you know, watch some television. You know, as opposed to, I said I would get this done, and it needs to, because, you know, I have families to support.
Yeah, I recently saw a motivational or inspirational video that Will Smith did, or somebody did, with lots of Will Smith interviews. And one of his statements there really struck with me. He says, you know, one of the reasons he's successful is he works harder than anybody else. He says, while you're eating, he's working. While you're sleeping, he's working. Okay.
Yeah.
That, you know, he just outworks everybody. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're right. The tendency of, oh, I'm tired. It's been 12 hours at the job. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Yeah. And you got to have that sense of urgency.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you the truth. If I didn't have my day job, Jet Sox would have succeeded or failed a long time ago.
Right.
Right. And that's one of those things where you see some people have success rapidly because they almost have to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you've probably heard the story about when the Romans invaded England and they unload off the ships. And all of a sudden on the horizon, they see all these fierce warriors coming over the hill. And the commander of all the ships, you know, turned to the ship's captains, and he said, "Burn the ships," because once they burnt the ships, they had to either kill these people
or they're going to die.
Yeah.
And of course, they went on to conquer England.
Right.
But can you imagine sitting there watching the ships burn and like, well, I guess we better fight.
Yeah.
Yes, that kind of made our decision for us.
Right.
Right.
Right. And you know, bringing on and so having more obligations.
Right.
For me, as a way to burn my ships.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way for me to.
Right. You want to call your job right now and quit just to show them how committed you are?
Absolutely not. I love what I do during the day.
That's right. So I take it that as things have progressed, the business has not been going the way that you originally thought it would be. So you got to kind of be open to mid-course corrections.
Yeah. Yeah. It is not the business that I envisioned. You know, when I first sat down with the plan and really started looking at it. The market is different than we expected. There's a lot more resistance than we expected. Just how to get the product made is a lot harder than we thought.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of things that happened after we, you know, started that have changed. And if I was really attached to the way things looking a particular way,
mm-hmm.
you know, such as you know, I've been at this for 2 years and I'm still, you know, not, you know, fully employed by it.
Right.
You know, if I was really attached to being fully employed by it, you know, that would cause some upset, and that upset would pull me away from what I'm already doing. You know, it would pull me away from focusing on what's really important, which is, you know, building a business that lasts, that something that is profitable, something that works. You know, as opposed to being attached to, you know, that we got, you know, $100,000 in funding and I've got two salespeople working for me and, you know, all of the things that were possibilities at the beginning.
Right. Yeah, I think the American Bar Association wrote a booklet for innovators, and they said the two common mistakes that they make is they underestimate how much money it's going to take and they underestimate how much time it's going to take.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, before the program started about Sarah Bakely and Spanx. Her story's on her website. It was 5 years. It was a 5-year journey. And when you look at Dyson with his vacuum cleaner, I don't know how many years it was, but I know he went through several thousand iterations of how that vacuum cleaner would be put together.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a while, okay?
Yeah, there are no overnight successes.
I tell people it takes years to be an overnight success.
Yeah, yeah, that is very true. You know, that you look at musical, you know, a lot of music artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been singing or doing their craft for years and years, and then all of a sudden they're number one, and you can't, you know, and you're sick of hearing about them.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of people like that.
Yeah, I was with my wife shopping at a place called Tuesday Morning, and there was this big old book that they had on sale about the early days of the Rolling Stones. And I'm sitting there reading about all the clubs they played, sometimes two or three gigs a day in different clubs before they were discovered. Okay,
gosh.
Getting the songs down and the you know, the coordination, the choreography, and all like that. And then the person that ended up signing them turned down the Beatles. Okay, And when he found the Stones, he says, I'm not making the same mistake twice. I want to sign you guys.
That's amazing.
But he turned down the Beatles, thought they were going to go nowhere. Okay.
Hey, you know.
That's something. Well, how can people learn more about Jet Sox?
You can go to our website, mm-hmm. which is jetsoxllc.com.
Okay.
And, you know, you can listen to this program over and over again, send it to your friends, forward it on. But yeah, that the website would be the great start, because it has how it works, why it works, and how to contact us.
Okay. And if I find anybody that's in that area, I'm definitely going to guide them that way.
Please do. We're anxious to help.
Okay. Well, Damon, this has been great, and I'm hoping that Jet Sox, you know, in a couple of years, people will say, we heard that program, you know, many years ago, and now it's everywhere.
Yeah, excellent. Okay. I'd love to hear that.
All right. Well, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
And this has been another exciting episode of Launch with our producer, Lee Cantor. This is Ron Reardon, and Jim DeBetta will be here next week.